This week on the Canadian Tech Podcast, Elon Musk says solar shingles will cost less than traditional roofs. Police are looking for the right to force you to unlock your smartphone, and the CRTC is trying to make skinny cable packages happen. That's all next and more on the Canadian Tech Podcast. The Canadian Tech Podcast is sponsored by Olio Digital Labs. Olio are the planners, designers, and developers of the apps used by some of Canada's biggest brands. Find out what Olio can do for you at oliodigitallabs.com. Welcome to the Canadian Tech Podcast for Monday, November 21st, 2016. My name is Derek Silva. And that's it. It's just me this evening recording the podcast for the week. Unfortunately, Stuart Clark is out sick. Stuart, we wish you well and hopefully you are feeling better soon. In the meantime, I thought, you know what? I can do the podcast by myself. We'll do a more news-focused edition of the podcast. I'll still have a little bit of opinion and analysis thrown in for good measure, but that's it. It's just me this week. Unfortunately, we couldn't find anybody else, so hopefully that'll be okay. So let's dive right in and talk about Tesla. Just after shareholders approved the Tesla acquisition of SolarCity last week, both companies that were majority-owned, or at least partially owned, by Elon Musk. Elon famously dropped one of his bombshells saying that the new SolarCity solar roofs would actually cost less than traditional rooftop shingles to make and install, according to Bloomberg. He said that the basic proposition will be, would you like a roof that looks better than a normal roof, lasts twice as long, costs less, and, by the way, generates electricity? Why would you get anything else? Good question, Elon. That's actually a very good question. So the solar shingles are still expected to be considered a premium product at rollout, but apparently Tesla does expect to incur lower production costs than traditional roof tiles. Part of that will be their anticipation that they'll be lighter and easier to ship, which therefore reduces costs on breakage and transportation. I'm not personally sure that that would be enough, but, you know, hopefully it is. And, of course, we know that these were first unveiled back on October 28th in Universal Studios' movie lot. And, the merger went through very easily. 85% of unaffiliated shareholders, meaning shareholders who do not have own a piece of both Tesla and SolarCity, approved the deal, and there you have it. I'm skeptical, and I think that's okay at this stage, to the claim that these solar shingles will be cheaper to produce and install, or to make and install. But, of course, as Elon Musk said, why would you get anything else? I don't think you would, especially if you can get a Powerwall unit or two installed in your home, and the roof costs less. That would certainly make purchasing a Powerwall, which I believe starts at $5,500 US, easier, and would certainly give you more impetus to do so. So that will remain to be seen until they actually start to roll out. In the meantime, Mark Zuckerberg, although he says that Facebook's fake news problem did not contribute to Donald Trump's win of the U.S. presidential election, he is outlining how they're going to be fixing it. In a post to Facebook a few days ago, the night of the 18th, Mark Zuckerberg outlined steps that Facebook is going to take to limit the spread of false information, but he did reiterate his belief that the company should not become the, quote, arbiters of truth. Some of the projects currently underway at Facebook include new systems that will help flag false information, better ways for people to report misinformation, and flags to users once fake articles are reported. So you'll still see these things in your feed, but something should indicate that it's been flagged as being false. We're also going to see better recommendations when an article is clicked on. And Facebook is updating its ad policies to discourage spam sites, something Google is also doing, which profit off the exposure of fake news. Zuckerberg also noted that Facebook is going to be working with journalists and, quote, respected fact-checking organizations to understand how they work to verify information so that the company can learn from their efforts and their experience. That's altogether great. Whether you feel like Facebook's the spread of false information on Facebook that is taken as verbatim by a lot of people contributed to the U.S. presidential election results or not, or whether they're even contributing to other problems types of misinformation here in Canada, I think it's good to personally to actually flag information that we can verify is in fact false. So we will see how that goes over the next few months, I'm sure. Moving right along, there could be a Derek rant here. Police want the right to force Canadians to unlock their phones. As reported by Mobile CIRT, police in Canada are looking to make it a criminal offense to refuse allowing an officer with a search warrant to search Canadians' phones. Right now, there is no law in Canada that forces a Canadian to hand over their passwords or encryption keys to law enforcement. However, police, being frustrated that digital evidence often leads to dead ends, are obviously looking to get that changed. The report from the Toronto Star goes on to say that the motion put forth by police speaks to a growing dilemma for Canadian law enforcement agencies that repeatedly come up against roadblocks while searching for crucial evidence. And there are several sides to this argument. Police say that this is a matter of public safety. And, of course, the famous one-liner that users have nothing to hide if they're not doing anything wrong, and therefore there should be no reason to restrict access. Of course, the ability of the police to do their jobs is being eroded due to, quote, disappearing evidence. Oh, on the other hand, privacy advocates like yours truly argue that the movement by police is an abuse of law enforcement power. It breaches the Canadian right to protect against self-incrimination, similar to the U.S., where you hear people plead the Fifth Amendment, which is the right not to incriminate themselves. And the Canadian Charter of Rights and Freedoms does protect Canadians from self-incrimination, which, of course, is arguably breached by the obligation to provide access to your phone to an officer. So, you know what? I'm going to skip it. This already makes it plainly clear how I feel. Absolutely, police should not be able to force you to unlock your phone, to decrypt your data, that the password is something that is stuck inside your head and therefore should not be forced out under duress, legal or otherwise. So if this is something you feel strongly about, you got to make sure you tell your MP, whether they are a Liberal, an NDP, a Conservative, a Green Party member, an Independent. It doesn't matter. You need to make sure that they know how you feel so that they can hopefully vote on your behalf if something like this comes to Parliament. In the meantime, backup cameras might become mandatory for cars in May 2018. I'm okay with this. Transport Canada says that new cars and small trucks will have to be equipped with rear-view camera systems starting in May 2018. The new regulations have been formally posted in the Canada Gazette for a 75-day comment period. Again, your chance to provide some feedback there. The requirement for backup visibility brings Canadian standards in line with those in the U.S. That's often a thing that manufacturers appreciate, and in this case, I'm okay with that. Like I said, Transport Canada is saying that this is a safety measure because children, disabled persons, the elderly, and others are vulnerable to backup mishaps. All true. And there are estimates that such accidents killed 27 people, and injured more than 1,500 between 2004 and 2009. Given that we have more people and more cars now, it was probably higher. Well, it might be higher, might be the same over the last few years, now that some vehicles do have rear view backup cameras. This new requirement would apply to new light vehicles, including passenger cars, light trucks, Ford Ranger type vehicle, three-wheelers, and small vans and buses. I am okay with this. I don't think there's really much else to say about that. It will force car manufacturers to enhance their in-dash systems, which, again, I'm okay with, and just make things safer for everyone. I don't rely purely on the backup camera in one of my vehicles, but certainly when it's there, I use it, and it's good. It works really, really well, but of course you still got to watch your blind spots. All right, so Twitter finally seems to be moving forward in some significant ways to curb abuse. I'm not going to comment on the recent banning of some white nationalist American accounts, but in the meantime, Twitter is expanding the mute option to allow users to block tweets based on keywords, phrases, and the content of conversations from users' notifications. Right now, it can only be used to allow users to block tweets from specific accounts. This change was being rolled out over the last few days. Everybody should have access to it now. I know I noticed it right away across a few accounts, and it was highlighted in the official Twitter app, mobile app. Back in July, of course, there have been some issues, and I'm going to go check the blog here because... Twitter has been highlighting their hateful conduct policy, which is what they used recently to ban some accounts. And certainly expanding the mute option to work in more scenarios, and of course to keep things out of your notifications. You know, the hate's still there, but certainly if people who are hating on you for whatever reason, know that at some point you're no longer seeing it. Hopefully that should curb the actual tweets themselves and keep them to a minimum, because ultimately you're not seeing those things anyway. Muting keywords, phrases, things like that, I think that's great. You can, take yourself right out of a conversation. You can't stop people from mentioning you in it, but you can stop hearing about it, kind of like if you stop following a post in Facebook. So that's neat. And, I'm not sure it's still enough, but these new measures do sound legitimate and should help ease the pain for people who are the subject of hateful tweets. Something that I'm not experiencing, but I know many people who are, Apple has a new fix for their quote-unquote touch disease on the iPhone 6 Plus models. So what they're doing is offering Canadians an option of only quote-unquote only $189 to fix the issue. The issue is something that causes the phone screen to freeze up and no longer respond to touch commands. And this follows months of customer complaints about touch disease and multiple proposed class action lawsuits filed against Apple over the issue. And while Apple is offering a fix, some customers are still upset to discover that the company is charging a fee and essentially placing the blame on the user. Someone said that Apple said that they have determined that some iPhone 6 Plus devices may exhibit display flickering or multi-touch issues. However, the problem, according to Apple, arises after the phone has been dropped multiple times on a hard surface and then is subjected to further stress. The Globe and Mail reports here some quotes from some people who are quite upset. I know some folks who are experiencing the same issue with an iPhone 6, not just an iPhone 6 Plus, and they are not happy about it either. I don't know. It seems like something that they just shouldn't be charging for, especially since the people I know are either very careful with their phones or have cases on them. Like good cases, and so I don't buy the cause that Apple's pointing out here. So we will see. Maybe some of those class action lawsuits will move ahead. In some surprising news, Microsoft has joined the Linux Foundation as a platinum member last week. And it's worth noting that Microsoft is actually one of the biggest open source corporate open source contributors around recently. They helped Canonical bring the Bash shell to Windows 10. They are bringing SQL Server to Linux. They have open sourced core parts of the .NET platform. They've partnered with Red Hat, SUSE, and a bunch of other ones. And they contribute a lot of code to projects like Node.js, OpenDaylight, the Open Container Initiative, the R Consortium, or Consortium, if you prefer, and the Open API Initiative. And they are also engaged in the OpenAI, actually I think this should be OpenAI, OpenAI Initiative with a bunch of other companies. And so, of course, this is still coming as a surprise to a bunch of people, but regardless, this really is a new Microsoft in a lot of ways. I think they've made some missteps still over the past year or two with buying up and shutting down the Sunrise Calendar team. I'm kind of concerned what will happen to Wunderlist next and stuff like that. But, you know, initiatives like this kind of make up for it. So it is also worth noting that the Linux Foundation, to become a platinum member means you are paying $500,000 for the privilege. Others include Cisco, Fujitsu, HPE, which is HP Enterprise, Huawei, IBM, Intel, NEC, Oracle, Qualcomm, Samsung, and then a bunch of other companies like Google and Facebook are gold sponsors. So, and John Gossman, who is an architect on the Azure team, is joining the Linux Foundation Board of Directors. Good for Microsoft. Good for Linux. Stop fighting. Microsoft really does want to be, it seems, your go-to company for software, period, regardless of the platform. And that seems to be paying off dividends for them in a lot of ways. So kudos to them. Similarly, in somewhat unexpected news, Google has signed on to the .NET Foundation, and Samsung is bringing .NET support to Tizen. So while Microsoft is joining the Linux Foundation, Google is going the other way and joining the .NET Foundation, which is the open source foundation started when Microsoft started to open source parts of the .NET Core project. So Google already allows developers on its cloud platform to deploy .NET applications thanks to its support for Windows Server, and it offers .NET libraries for more than 200 of its cloud services. It's already an active .NET contributor, and therefore the surprise didn't really come as a, the announcement didn't come as a complete surprise to some people. Regardless, I was not aware of all of that, so it does come as a bit of a surprise to me. And therefore, Samsung, on the other side, is bringing .NET support to its Tizen platform, the other operating system it uses on things like fridges, smartwatches, TVs, and so on. According to Samsung, they looked at into alternatives, but .NET was superior. And noted that Samsung was looking for a framework with a strong foundation in terms of language support, APIs, tooling, as well as one of the largest built-in developer bases and an open source community. I guess technically .NET has all of them. So has all those things. And not in the show notes, but last week Microsoft also unveiled the latest version of Xamarin, their development platform, or a development platform they bought earlier this year or late last year, and they're now calling that Visual Studio for Mac. So that was interesting. All right, WhatsApp. I don't use it, but I have a lot of respect for the founders there. They have unveiled video calls, and Skype is opening up guest accounts. So on for WhatsApp, they have announced that video calls will finally be rolling out. And that's a move that came on the same day Microsoft revealed that Skype can now be used online without registration. WhatsApp video chats are coming to iOS, Android, and Windows Phone. And Microsoft, meanwhile, said that Skype fans can now access a video conferencing guest account without registering for a login via its web app. I think that's at web.skype.com, if I recall correctly. And we know that WhatsApp has over a billion users, monthly active users. Voice calls were first released in April 2015, and the new video service is pretty basic. When users make a call, they are prompted to choose between voice and video. If you choose video, you are presented with a bare-bones call, no fun stuff like filters and things like that. WhatsApp engineer said that we want it to be simple. We want to make sure people understand how video calls can be done. That's been the model for everything we've developed at WhatsApp. End quote. So this is good. If you if you've used either of these, feel free to let us know what it's been like at contact@canadiantechpodcast.ca. Going back to Skype for a second here, Microsoft suggested that it has finally noticed that there are plenty of other desktop video conferencing apps that don't require users to register. And so now users can generate a link to a conversation from Skype's homepage, which guests can join immediately upon clicking on a link, either through the app or as a guest from the web. And all of Skype's free features are being made available in this way, including group instant messaging, voice calls, video calls, screen sharing, and file sharing. Now up to 300 people can chat and 25 people can join a call, said Microsoft. So big numbers, good for them. All right, we're going to take a break here for a word from our sponsor, Olio Digital Labs. Hi, folks. Derek breaking in here with an ad for our sponsor, Olio Digital Labs. Do you have an idea for a mobile app, a problem that needs solving, or disparate pieces of software that need to speak to each other? The team at Olio Digital Labs is here to help. Olio are the planners, designers, and builders behind the solutions used by some of Canada's biggest brands, and they can also help you. Olio offers custom mobile and web applications, websites, and platforms. To find out how Olio can help you, call 226-785-0420, email derek@oliodigitallabs.com, or visit oliodigitallabs.com to learn more about the company and its services. And now, back to the show. And we're back. Thank you, Olio, for sponsoring the Canadian Tech Podcast. In some Canadian news, the CRTC is bringing pick and pay reforms on December 1st. We might finally see proper pick and pay coming. Beginning December 1st, all TV service providers must give consumers the option of subscribing to channels a la carte or in small groups on top of a basic service package that cannot cost more than $25 per month before equipment rentals. That last part hasn't changed. The latest move is part of a bunch of changes that the CRTC is making aimed at increasing affordability and choice in the cable, satellite, and internet TV market. Regulators have been intent on removing the shackles from consumers forced to subscribe to multi-channel bundles to get the programming they want. Hallelujah. Back in 2015, the CRTC unveiled the regulatory reforms that required companies to offer a stripped-down basic bundle by March 2016. We've all seen how that's gone. Not very well. And the mandated entry level or skinny basic package, if you prefer, must give priority to local and regional news programming and may also include affiliates of U.S. networks. So as of December 1st, consumers can choose to supplement that basic package by buying individual channels or through small bundles of up to 10 channels that can be geared to content such as sports and comedy, and they are also free to remain with their existing cable package, of course. Rates for individual channels or theme packs will be set by the cable and satellite TV providers. Don't expect those to be inexpensive. But research is suggesting that a majority of Canadian households are going to remain with bundled channels, only smaller ones that better suit their needs. That's better than nothing. While others will cut the cable cord entirely in favor of TV shows and other content streamed online. I saw recently that we're expecting, or the industry is expecting, about 200,000 cord cutters this year. We were already at almost 100,000 earlier this year. So we'll see what happens. Rogers said that they're going to be introducing full standalone channel selection by December 1st, starting at $1.99 per month. That's not bad. That would be all right for a bunch of channels. And ultimately, we're going to have to see how this all plays out. So if you are not a cord cutter and you have some feedback for us when this when these changes come through, please let us know. Again, at contact@canadiantechpodcast.ca. You can send us tweets at tech_podcast.ca. Links in the show notes. And we have a Facebook page as well. Google showed off some really cool tech last week called Razor. It's a method of upscaling images with machine learning. So basically what they do is take existing images, apply some artificial intelligence, machine learning to the image, and they're able to enhance the quality, the clarity, upsample the image itself through using that machine learning, those machine learning algorithms. Razor stands for Rapid and Accurate Image Super Resolution. That's fun. And so essentially, Google has trained Razor with 10,000 pairs of images, one low quality, one high quality, to create filters that recreate details close in approximation to the original images. Of course, there's a you can go to the Google research blog and get a really detailed technical explanation if you like. But essentially, Google is hoping that that this algorithm can be used to restore images taken with low-resolution cameras or as an improvement to pinch-to-zoom on mobile devices. And that could even allow for less mobile data usage by transmitting images at a lower resolution and then upsampling them on your phone or on your mobile device. So that looks really cool. And the examples here they have on Android police are actually quite impressive, I will say. The first image here of an older gentleman, you can even see the detail in his eyebrows, his individual eyebrows, just pop and clear up. And it's quite impressive. Good on you, Google. And maybe one day we'll all be able to be CSI-like and say, can you zoom in right there? Yeah, on the license plate. And enhance that. You actually get the license plate number from 500 meters away. We'll see. All right, in our local story, London, Ontario has landed a new high-tech company that is going to bring leading-edge 3D printing technology and jobs to the city. Renishaw Group is expecting to announce in the new year the opening of a London manufacturing center with more than 20 jobs, according to the Dean of Western University's Schulich School of Medicine and Dentistry. Renishaw, which also prints 3D parts for the auto and aerospace sectors, will make medical parts here in London, from knee joints, hip joints, to cranial components for brain injury patients, and things like that. This is a global, leading company in 3D technology, according to the dean I mentioned earlier. And this sounds really, really neat. Renishaw has worked with Western's Musculoskeletal Group already for years, and that's kind of where the manufacturing center seems to be growing out of. So a nice public-private partnership here taking form. And this will be really cool. It'll be nice to see a global company expand to Canada and London specifically. And these types of high-end 3D manufacturing, advanced manufacturing type positions are exactly the ones Canada needs to be going after. So good on London, good on Western University, and hope to see that that announcement happen in the new year from Renishaw. All right, our things we like. Stuart didn't give me anything for him, so I guess we don't have anything for him. For me, it's the Atom Ticket app. Atom spelled A-T-O-M, like the atom in a molecule type thing. Atom's not new, well, not brand new. It's been out for a few months. But what I find really neat is the fact that it is not restricted to one chain of theaters, which is neat. And what I particularly like is that once you've selected your movie and your showtime, the map it gives you to choose your seats is really, really nice. It's prettier than the ones on, let's say, Landmark Cinema's website, which works fine, but it's not great to look at. Not that that's a huge issue. But it's really, really nice. And if there are certain rows that aren't available anymore, it just doesn't show you those rows. So it's a little bit dynamic that way, which is nice. The whole user experience leaves a little bit to be desired. It's not quite as intuitive as I'd like it to be, but it works, and it works really well. So if you're interested, you can go check out adamtickets.com. There's links to, you can use it online, or there's links to the mobile apps in the footer there, and you can use the mobile app to buy your ticket, buy your concessions, and then skip the line entirely and just show them the app when you get to the movie theater, which is cool. Or show them a QR code or something like that. And that almost does it. What are we up to lately? Stuart said he's been unpacking still. He's prepping for a busy week ahead. I know his boss was in today. Hopefully that went okay. Me personally, I had to put a stop to initiatives like Host Expert, the Portuguese brand I had for developing for Clever Host. SSL Cheap, dead. The IT department, dead. Reason for all that is because I need to make way for recently being appointed counselor of Ward 4 in Middlesex Center last Wednesday. That's exciting. So as of next Wednesday, once I'm actually sworn in, I will officially be a counselor on municipal council. And that's certainly going to take up enough of my time that I had to let a few other things go by the wayside. So, but that's okay. I'm excited. I've already been in touch with a lot of people. I had phone calls with municipal staff to catch up and get up to speed on what's going on. And I'm really looking forward to that. So that's it for this week on the Canadian Tech Podcast. We would really appreciate reviews on iTunes, Google Play, TuneIn, Stitcher. You can find us on all those platforms. Or wherever else you get your podcast. Not every platform allows for reviews, but if you listen to us on one that does, please review us. That would be great. If you see us tweet about new episodes on Twitter, we really appreciate some retweets. Or you can share our Facebook updates there, or bring them over to Google Plus as well. Or you can just tell a friend. You could always find our tweet or find our Facebook status update, share it, and tag a couple of friends that you think would find the show interesting. That would be great. So for the Canadian Tech Podcast on Monday, November 21st, I'm Derek Silva. Have fun.